And welcome to the AV Forums TV Display and Calibration Podcast for Monday, the 11th of March, 2024, one day before my 50th birthday. Welcome along to the podcast. As always, I have my guests here this week, and this week we've got Dr. Julian Scott. Hello, Doctor.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Phil.
And we've also got Martin Jew. Hello, Martin.
Hello.
Was that the Scottish lilt there? Was that Martin?
Sounded like it. So what are we doing this week on the TV Display and Calibration Podcast? Well, we are asking a question. Is now the best time to go and buy a TV? And should you buy last year's TV over the upcoming models that are due to come out through the spring and summer? Is it worth saving a few quid? We're going to answer that question a little bit later on. Also, just to remind you, we're no longer live streaming these podcasts. They are pre-recorded. If you have any questions and comments, and we do answer your questions, then you can send them to podcast@avforums.com on the email. Or the easiest way is to find this podcast on the forum. So go to AV Forums, find the forum list, go all the way to the bottom, you'll see the podcast forum. Just find this episode and add your question there. If you're not a member, you'll need to sign in and create a membership. But that's a nice, easy 2-minute job to do that. Or, of course, if you're watching on YouTube, then you can leave your question in the comments down below. If you do watch the YouTube version, then do remember that this is not available on the main AV Forums channel. These podcasts have moved to their own dedicated channels, AV Forums Podcasts. So head over to YouTube and subscribe to that channel so you don't miss any of our podcasts if you enjoy watching the video versions of those. And of course, you know, we are AV Forum, so who are we? Well, we're one of the largest AV and hi-fi communities on the web, and we've been around since 2000, and our editorial reviews and everything else started in 2003. So we create content for you, and we're here to answer your questions, give you honest, accurate, and unbiased advice. And my name's Phil Hinton, I'm the editor of the site, have been since 2003, done over 20 years on AV Forums. I'm ISF, THX, and PVA. Trained and certified and qualified and signed off and all the rest of it. And I do the reviews on the site and make the videos as well. So also on the podcast today is Jules. So Jules, give us a brief introduction.
Yeah, Phil, I've been a calibrator since 2011. THX seems to be a theme today with Martin's hat. So I became a THX certified calibrator back then, and now PVA, Professional Video Alliance instructor as well. I do audio calibrations and travel, I wouldn't say the globe, but travel around Europe. Just come back from Andorra, which is a very nice, fine trip indeed. So that's me.
Okay. And we also have Martin. So Martin, why don't you introduce yourself?
Well, I started in the industry back in the mid-90s. I actually went out to San Francisco and got a job with Lucasfilm Limited, their THX division. And I used to run their global home THX certified training programs, and then moved into the pro side of the business for cinema licensing. I then, after about 9 years there, I then moved to LA for many years and worked for NEC Corporation, but I'd moved completely over to pro at that point because I was in business development for our own 2K made projectors for cinemas. In the last 6 or 7 years, I've been predominantly a AV and professional cinema journalist, and I also consult to a couple of manufacturers as well, but all in the home arena.
Okay, so that's who we are, and of course we're here for you. We're enthusiasts at the end of the day. We love this subject just as much as you do, and hopefully we can impart some of our knowledge today on the podcast. And if you do have your questions, then of course we've told you how to get them into us. Now, before we go and answer some of your questions from the last TV and display podcast, we've got current competitions. Jules, tell us about those.
Yeah, absolutely. You can win a pair of Q-Acoustics M40 powered speakers worth £749, courtesy of Peter Tyson. These ultra-compact micro-tower speakers feature two times 100 watts of built-in amplification, the C-cubed continuous curved con mid-bass driver, high-resolution wireless streaming via Bluetooth 5 with aptX HD, numerous connectivity options for most sound sources such as a TV, turntable, needs a built-in preamp, games console, set-top box, CD player, network streamer, and this closes at $23.59 on Monday, April 1st.
That's a cracking price. And there's a review on the homepage as well. So
yeah,
go and check the review.
And you can also win a Valencia Tuscany XL Ultimate Luxury Onyx Cinema Seat worth over £2,200. Valencia Seating has provided this superb prize designed to elevate your movie-watching journey to unparalleled heights. And that closes on the at 23:59 on Saturday, March 30th. So, good
competitions
prizes.
Competitions galore. Yeah, they're very, very good prizes. avforums.com/competitions to enter those. Competition is open to all eligible AV Forums members over 18, and you need to be resident in the UK. There's no previous winners. We do have a new patron, and a few people have bought us a coffee, so why don't you tell us about them, Martin?
Yes, new patrons. Excuse me while I look over to my other monitor, but our new patron is Jaimin Desai, and bought us a coffee. Thank you very much. At Chojin, we've got Aqua Dulce and Mr. Black 79.
Thank you very much for your support, guys. It really is appreciated. Thanks for doing that. It helps us improve our editorial, and maybe one day we'll do a good podcast. No promises, but maybe one day. So moving on to your Q&A. So some of these questions came from the last podcast, which was on the 12th of February. Murphy says, I think it would be brilliant if you stick with the perfect TV as the podcast master title and the theme of these podcasts. Good suggestion. We may take that under consideration. If you could go into more technical detail, and don't worry if you're not keeping it simple because the audience are proper TV geeks, we will go into detail, but we will also try and make sure that it is accessible to people who want to get involved in this hobby. Sometimes if you go too technical, it can scare some people away, and then they're scared to ask questions. We don't want that. We want everybody included in this. We want it to be inclusive. So we will go into detail. We'll cover technical details, but we'll try and make it nice and simple and easy to follow as well, and get everybody involved and hopefully answer everybody's questions. But thank you very much, Murphy, for your question. Yeah, and then you gave us a whole list of things that you'd like us to cover. I'm not going to go through them right now, but all of the 11 items that you listed there, we will no doubt cover those because they are popular subjects that we will get into. Toonami says, one request for making these presentations, plenty of demonstrations and examples would be appreciated. So Toonami's talking about tutorial videos that we are going to make this year, and some of the guides into how to use your equipment. Absolutely, we are going to shoot video. We'll show you exactly all the steps that you have to take to make sure that you can do the things that we're going to show you how to do. So don't worry about that, Toonami. We've got you covered there. Right, Julian, do you want to do the next two? Because it was a question poised to yourself.
Sure. Yeah. Jacito77 says, in another podcast last year, Jules mentioned about TV electronics components drifting over time. So professionally, previously calibrated TV should be recalibrated after a while, like a car going to MOT. If I only use the filmmaker mode in a TV, could resetting it to factory mode and then to use the filmmaker mode again be comparable to recalibrating it? And we have actually a reply to this directly, continuing the THX theme. THX1138UK replies, a factory reset can't fix this, only a full recalibration that measures the actual output of your particular TV, which then compensates for these unique changes, can address the problem. However, this aging effect may be very subtle, especially on a modern TV. If you watch in filmmaker mode, then the image will be substantially less saturated and dimmer than a TV that's always used in vivid mode, and this will slow the picture deterioration. It is absolutely correct to say that just resetting your TV and then, you know, going back to filmmaker mode doesn't fix this. It's an aging of the panel itself that can only be addressed with a full recalibration. So however long you want to leave that, you know, it's just kind of how long is a piece of string, and that sometimes comes down to money considerations as well. Certainly, you know, in professional grading studio situations, we're calibrating regularly, sometimes, you know, every 2 months, at least before every new season, just because we are color critical and we want to make sure it's absolutely bang on every time we're doing a new content. So I think that sort of covers that, doesn't it?
Yep, I think so. Yep. Interesting what you say there about studios, because I was being told something just this week. Actually, I'm not going to divulge where the information came from on the studio in question, but when they green light a project nowadays, they have a whole itinerary list, and they go and buy everything brand new.
Wow.
There's no hiring of equipment. There's no using equipment that already exists. They want a complete fresh slate with every show that they commission.
Wow.
So that I thought
have
that
they got
was
an
really...
e-bike site?
Well, maybe. Yeah, they're going to have to get rid of the kit
Yeah,
somewhere. But
exactly.
yeah, that is seemingly a major studio does do that on every green light. They will have an itinerary of everything has to be brand new, so it's a
Wow.
clean slate. So there you go.
Stuart,
Expensive.
I think you said, sorry, I think you said in a previous podcast that as a general rule, 2 years was quite good, wasn't it, for a consumer to consider getting a recalibration done?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's difficult to say, you know, depending on make or model, when something is going to be beneficial, you know, a recalibration is beneficial. It all depends sometimes upon the mentality of the owner. You know, I do have guys, I have people who want to have their, like a car MOT every single year, book you back in again. Let's do this time next year, make sure everything is still good. And if the drift is very marginal and you can't even see it, they're still happy because they've had it verified. So it you know, and that's often the case again with post-production too. Although you have the added complication in post-production that a lot of grading monitors have knobs on the front of them for contrast and brightness and really critical features, and it's very easy for them to get knocked or somebody comes along and tweaks. And so you'd want to make sure that everything's still accurate from that point of view. But you know, and this might also tie into the results of the polls that have been running, AV Forum's been running on sort of how often do you buy a new TV as well, because some people's mentality is, well, you know, I won't see them for another 5 years until they buy a new TV and they'll get that calibrated as well. So it comes down to cost too. I'd say you'd get good value every 2 years at least.
Yeah, and of course with modern electronics as well, you know, these drifts, the component drift that used to be 10% the allowance, you'll be lucky if it's 2 or 3% these days. Uh-huh. Just with the way that components are nowadays, and you know, they've managed to improve that. So hopefully that answers all the questions. And like I say, if you've got questions for us, you want to get involved in our discussion today and give us your points of view on that, then of course head over to avforums.com. Go to the forums, go all the way down to the bottom, find the podcast, and then find this podcast and ask a question. Or if you're watching on YouTube, it's down below. Or if you're really old-fashioned, you could email us at podcast@avforums.com. Right, so let's move on to today's show and today's subject. And it's our TV buyer's guide. Now, you're going to see lots of this kind of content on AV Forums going forward this year, and because it's our job, really, I think, to give you the best possible information when it comes to potential purchases and so on. We won't tell you what to buy, and we keep banging on about this, but we'll say it again, we've already mentioned it today, there is no such thing as a perfect TV in general, but there is a perfect TV for you. You need to decide what your use case is, what you need the TV for, what you're looking for in terms of features, and then buying the TV that best fits your use case. And that'll be the perfect TV for you. And there's lots of models out there. It can get incredibly confusing for a lot of people, mainly for a lot of people who have been maybe in away for 5 years because they haven't needed a TV and they've been happy with what they have. And then all of a sudden it goes pop, or they decide that they want to upgrade their TV to the latest and greatest. And technology moves very quickly in 5 years, Jules. So, you know, where were you 5 years ago in terms of TV? Can you remember what technology you had at that moment in time?
Yeah, absolutely. It was, it was 5 years now. What is it, 2024? So it's 2019. So I had probably had a B8 at that point.
Okay, an LG.
Something like that, LG. And before that, I had a B7. And I've got a C1. I guess it's probably time at some point. I haven't told my wife yet. She's not watching in the other room. But maybe I should be looking at upgrading soon.
Yep. Okay. I guess as a TV reviewer, I'm caught in this bubble where I have to keep reminding myself, and I do this, but I have to keep reminding myself how much these things actually cost. Mm. So put myself in that mindset, am I actually going to go and buy this product? And if I was, you know, what is the value for money? And the other thing is I see all the new TVs and I see them every year. And like we say, people don't buy a TV every year. Well, there's a very small, probably 0.07% of the population out there, and that's a complete and utter guess, but then 70% of statistics are just made up on the spot anyway. There's probably a very, very small niche out there who do buy their TV based on new technology and new improvements and so on. A lot of those people are on AV forums, but most people tend to take a couple of years before they jump and go to the next TV. So the thing is, and this is the question for today's podcast, Do you wait for the 2024 models to come along? Now, the 2024 models are excellent. I've seen a handful of them already. Some of them I can't talk about at the minute because I've seen them in environments which I've had no control over. So I don't want to give you an opinion on that because it's been under somebody else's control. But I have had an opportunity to see these models that are coming this year, and they do look great. But they're incremental differences compared to last year's models. Now, one I can talk about is the G4. It was announced at CES. We know quite a bit about that TV compared to last year's G3 from LG. So this is their flagship TV. It has a new processor. And some people in the comments told me off because I didn't go into any great detail of how great this processor is. But these people in the comments, with all due respect, haven't seen this TV or the processor. They're just going on the marketing that they've seen. There are slight differences between the models in terms of picture quality, but actually, is that worth the jump in price that you're going to pay for a brand new TV? Jules, if you were in the market right now, would you hang on for a 2024 TV because you have, I don't know, maybe you've got FOMO, the fear of missing out? Do you have to have the latest and greatest, or are you a little bit more laid back in your approach, you know what you want, and you're going to find it no matter how old that set is?
I suppose it comes down to that old chestnut, Phil's, is money no object? Because you're going to be paying a premium price, at launch. And if you waited, say, to Black Friday, that TV is going to be reduced significantly in price, So do you need the latest and greatest, or can you wait a few months until it's a more reasonable price? And I do find a lot of the people I calibrate for do that. They do wait until, Black Friday or the New Year sales. Yeah. And of course, there are people who are at that point where maybe have had a TV for 4 or 5 years and they're swapping out for a new one, and they are, willing to pay the extra. So, in terms of the calibrations I see, there is a crop of calibrations at the launch of the TV where somebody's paid the full price. But equally, there's also a big sort of surge of calibrations towards the end of the year when the sales come around as well. So I think we can, divide the clientele into those two categories. And often it's depending on, how much disposable cash somebody's got.
Mm. And Martin, for you, would you go and wait for the latest, or would you give it some time?
Not with flat panel displays, actually, nor with projectors. I tend to wait for technologies to bed in and then buy second or third generation. I'm quite happy to do it that way as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, even in the States, my TV in LA for almost the entire time that I was there was a professional grade NEC plasma display, 61 inches. And I loved that TV, and I didn't feel much compunction to change it, even though everything moved to, that TV was a WXGA, I think. So it was 1366 pixels across the top, but it looked fantastic with HD DVD and Blu-rays. So I just hung on to it, and I love the warm picture of it.
Excellent. So I guess if you want the latest and greatest, and you really need to have that TV, and there are some of us out there who are that way inclined and just want the best, and we want it right now as soon as it's launched, then of course you can go and jump in there. I guess the advice that we'd give, I think all three of us, is that go to AV forums. You will find that people will go out and buy these sets new, as Jules has just said, and they'll get them calibrated and so on. But as the months roll on, more and more people buy these TVs. And what you'll tend to find is that in the owner's threads over at AV Forums, you will get genuine feedback from people who've gone out and spent their own hard-earned money on these TVs and use them in their own homes. Now, they might not be using them in calibrated mode. Some of them might be shoving them into Vivid or have the image smoothing on and so on. And just bear that in mind when they're talking about picture quality. If you want to find out a bit more, then that's the pertinent questions to be asking them, how is your TV set up and so on. But they're more than willing to tell you that, and it gives you a good indication of how these TVs, mass-produced products, actually perform in people's homes. And of course, we will review the products as soon as they come out, but I don't expect people to go and buy TVs on the back of just a review. Should be part of your process when it comes to buying a product, is do your research, read the reviews, don't just read AV Forums reviews. There's lots of reviews out there. Like I say, get a good handle on the product. You'll know that you're getting objective data from our reviews, and you're getting an honest assessment of the product without any emotion attached to that, in terms of, you know, you must go and buy this product. We never use language like that and so on. But, you know, build up your picture of what you want. And I guess, Jules, 6 months is not too long to wait, and then make the decision as to whether you're going to jump on this new model or go for last year's, which, you know, will be still available and a lot cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, you know, there's something called the summer, which, you know,
not in the UK, there's not.
No, not here. This is as good as it gets, isn't it, right now? Yeah, and I mean, if you've got product launches around April, May time, then you've got the summer, and you know, people are out enjoying themselves, and they're in their cinemas less. So I guess, you know, a lot of people will enjoy that, and then come back to purchasing sort of autumn into winter time, and you get that sort of burst around Black Friday. So there are definite, for me at least, you know, in terms of activity for calibrations, you know, going alongside purchases, there are those two periods right at the very beginning when the product's launched. You get the people who want the very latest and the greatest, and then the others who are happy to wait until the sales later in the year. So you get that crop of calibrations around then, reflecting purchases too. So, and of course, the other thing is, you know, when a product's new, you might have some teething troubles with it as well. So by the time you wait 6-7 months, hopefully, you know, any troubles have been sort of dealt with yeah, some firmware updates, etc. Yeah. So there may be a benefit there to waiting a little time too.
Yeah, if there's serious issues, they're normally picked up in the reviews. Yeah. And I'll normally pick those up within the first couple of weeks of looking at a product. But there are those that are maybe intermittent, or issues that are seen with particular setups, certain kit that's connected to the TV. Sometimes it causes issues with eARC and so on. And these are things that you just can't test for in a review. You know, you have a product for a set time. Uh-huh. We get all the objective data that we can. We check what the product's like out of the box and then calibrated and so on. But at the end of the day, we can't check every console, every soundbar, every permutation of setup. So that's where the owner's threads really come in handy on AV forums. You know, you're getting people who actually go out and buy the products, and they will be using the same product but in completely different ways, Martin, won't they?
Yeah, totally. And before I started writing for AV forums, I used to use it as a resource frequently, particularly with things like what you've just mentioned, with things like HDMI compatibility. And if you've got a certain, let's say, Blu-ray player or certain receiver, and you're connected by whatever means to your display, there are a lot of things you've got to be aware of. What are those optimum settings for those devices which are connected? And for that reason, I would, with bias as well, say that AV Forums is possibly the greatest resource in the world for that, actually.
Yeah, I'd agree, Martin. You know, being a calibrator for many years, I would check the AV Forums review before going out to calibrate, because, you know, Phil's going to see those TVs before I do it, because he's a reviewer. So the first time I'll encounter them and get my hands on them to calibrate will be in somebody's front room. So having that, you know, that detailed review, just big up to the AV Forums reviews. They are giving a level of detail that a lot of other review sites, you know, don't give anymore. It's always been very useful a resource prior to going out. But as you say, you know, with the different combinations of equipment, some things just can't get flagged up until they're out into mass market and people are testing it with all sorts of different combinations. There may be some benefit to waiting a little while before purchasing, but also a big up to those guinea pigs that are getting it first.
Yeah. How much am I writing on this check, Jules?
The copy of
it. Thanks for those comments. I is appreciated. But yeah, I mean, we all have I can get to see these things nice and early. We've got a good deal with some retailers as well. So it's not necessarily manufacturer supplied units we're looking at as well. We're looking at actual retail units. As soon as they hit the store, we can get them in and have a look at them. So that's important. But I think the other thing that sometimes we forget, and certainly I forget sometimes as a reviewer, and probably yourself as a calibrator, Jules, is the language that we use. And this is another thing that we're looking at this year in terms of our content on AV forums and so on, is it inclusive? Is it accessible? Are we being too technical sometimes and scaring people away when they come to look at these products, or they want to find out a little bit more? So I guess, you know, when you look on the forums, you're going to find these two camps, Martin, where you're going to have the technical users who know what they're talking about and who will, you know, interact in a thread on a regular basis. And then you'll have those who are maybe scared to ask a question in case they think it's a silly question to ask on such a technical thread. And really, people shouldn't be put off, should they?
No, definitely not. And actually, I get comments under some of my reviews, and it amazes me. I mean, some of the people who are making the comments are clearly, you know, some of them are at sort of engineer level, and some of them are clearly novices as well. But I like to feel that in my reviews, I hope I get the balance just about right. I mean, I think part of the key is to write in hopefully as simple English as possible and let the technical bits do for itself. But yes, it is a bit of a challenge getting that right. But yes, I mean, I hope and I think we strike quite a good balance. I mean, there are other websites that go into a lot more depth, but I can only imagine that their audience is much smaller as well.
Yeah. So, you know, this is where you as a listener or viewer, you know, your input becomes very handy to us and important to us. You know, where is the pitch? Where do you think things are? And again, ask those questions. If you think that we are not covering certain areas, let us know. And if the language is wrong, let us know. Because at the end of the day, we do this for you. We don't do it for anybody else. We don't do it for manufacturers. We don't do it for anything like that. It's for end users at the end of the day. And Jules, all we want is a good product. You know, we appreciate it's a business. These manufacturers need to make money. There is going to be a whole load of marketing that's attached to these things. And again, that can confuse. So getting information across and the right information is important.
Absolutely. You know, AV forums will have a huge catchment area of people with different technical backgrounds and ability to understand things as well. So it has to be accessible at the same time. You know, it has to give people who are, you know, on the more geeky end of the scale that ability to dive into the weeds. So, it, you know, it's a difficult balance to hit, isn't it? But you know, I joined AV Forums back in 2004, and you know, and that seems, what's that, 20 years ago now. So, and I've seen the evolution of the forum from its very beginning.
It was all fields here back then, wasn't it? It was all fields.
but the other thing is, Phil, you know, you can also decide what you want to read of a review. I mean, you might decide that you want to leave out the how to and the technical sections of our reviews and jump straight to the performance, because performance is usually the area which is easier to understand and is written in sort of English that everyone gets.
Yeah. And it can be a little bit more subjective there as well. Buyer's guide, do your research is what we're saying. That is important. Don't just dive in, especially if you're going to be spending a significant sum on your next TV. And people will do that, and this is, I think, again, we've got distinct camps here, but when you're thinking about 5 years or 10 years that people are hanging on to these products, Jules, and certainly speaking to our retailer friends who are actually out there on the other side of the fence as well, people do tend to up their budget for their TVs in certain areas because they want that TV to last them the 5 to 10 years. So they want to future-proof, really.
Yeah, they'll probably, and you know, a lot of them will go for the top end model because they know they're going to keep it for 5 years, and they've got to be happy with it. There's nothing as worse as, you know, buyer's remorse, and finally you bought a product that doesn't meet your needs in a couple of years' time. So I guess there is that. And the other thing is, and I do speak to people, you know, I go around all the country and I calibrate for lots and lots of different people. Some people will only they'll only buy a new TV every 5 years, and they'll only dip into AV forums every 5 years. You know, I ask a lot of people, say, well, you know, I don't want to be, I've bought this TV now, and I don't want to feel, again, that buyer's remorse that I should have bought something else. Yeah. A fear of missing out, et cetera, as well. So again, if you've been out of the loop for 5 years, coming back to the forums and having to get, you know, what is MLA? You know, 5 years ago, MLA wasn't even a thing. I guess there's a lot of the people coming to the forums and trying to catch up with what's been happening. And these threads move at a pace well, you know, so it's, I don't know whether we can do something to help those people reintegrate and to you know, get back into the swing of things. But
AB Forums reintegration camps.
Jules, do you also get people regretting not having bought a big enough TV? I mean, I hear anecdotally that comes up a lot.
There's always regrets over size, always.
Yeah, when didn't they used to say about on computers? You know, think of how much memory you need and then double it, and a similar thing as well. We've obviously seen this, you know, progressively over the years, that screen size has gone up, you know, hugely. We all remember our first 28-inch CRTs and thinking they were massive. Well, they were certainly heavy, but now we're talking.
I didn't review back then.
Yeah, well, now we're talking, you know, 65, 77-inch, 83-inches becoming much more common. I guess as long as your other half is, you know, if you have another half, of course, is open to the a bigger size of TV, then I was trying to avoid that. I saw that coming down the road. I was trying to find some other words.
Yeah, you went straight into that, Caldy, didn't you?
there was no way out. That's often the restriction, though, isn't it? You know, my wife, presumably, she would like, we go away on holiday and she sees these 20-inch TVs in the sort of rental places. She says, that's the kind of TV size I want. And she thinks our 55-inch OLED's too big for the room. And I'm thinking like, we should go for a 65 at least. So there's negotiations domestically to be had with that kind of conversation too.
And of course, you know, Martin, this subject is confusing for a lot of people because you've got to consider so many different things. And we sometimes make fun of the box tickers, but actually knowing which boxes you want to tick will help you find the TV, the perfect TV for you.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a TCL 65-inch at the moment, which is absolutely perfect for my day-to-day TV watching. I do my critical movie watching in my cinema room, but I love having one that I can just fire up Netflix on or one of the apps and watch a bit of daytime broadcast or evening regular TV broadcasts as well. So yes, in those terms, so I don't need a very high-end TV in my living room, and I'm very happy with what I've got for the price.
Yeah, absolutely. So do your research, go and find out what is the latest technology, and then do you need it? We all like to think that we have the latest and greatest, but actually, if you don't need MLA technology, you don't need a TV that's great in darkroom viewings because you don't live in a grading suite or you're not interested in reference picture quality and so on, then you're open to looking at last year's TVs because you're not going to lose much in terms of image quality. You know, image quality does not go up in leaps and bounds every year. They're all incremental improvements. A lot of features that you see mentioned on TVs as well are pure marketing. And nothing other than marketing. They're adding sharpness and calling it super ultra sharpness 6 or whatever, or you know, they'll come up with some fancy name that, oh, this TV does this ultra resolution upscaling or ultra smooth motion or these things similar to that. It's all marketing at the end of the day. So just be aware of that as well. What is marketing and what's actually a useful feature? Is another, you know, minefield for people to get through. And hopefully our reviews and our articles and the owner's threads there with people who have gone and bought the TVs, hopefully this helps you narrow that down as well. And you can start to build a picture, pun intended, of what it is that you want as a TV. And then, like I say, there's two sides of this market that I see anyway, Jules. There's the end who want to know what it is, tick the boxes, have the technology that they want, image quality to a certain level, And then you get the what's the best TV under 500 quid side of the market. And when you're looking at £500 and below, you're exclusively talking about an LCD TV. And the advice for that end of the market is they're all going to be much of a muchness at £500. That's not to say that they're bad TVs, but you've got to be aware that you're not going to get huge net numbers, even on an LCD TV at that level of the market. You'll be lucky to get 300 or 400 nits out of a TV. And again, nits is another thing that's come on the scene and confuses people, and they think, oh, hell, this TV's got 5,000 nits, is going to, you know, burn my retinas. That's a whole other subject. But at this level of the market, you will get some features that are useful. So if you're looking at the lower end, rather than just walking into a supermarket, which is what a lot of people actually do, they'll go into a supermarket, they'll pick up a TV off the shelf at £400, £500. They won't read any reviews. And there's nothing wrong with that. They just want a TV that they're going to shove in the corner. They'll take it out of the box. They won't touch the menus or the image or anything like that. And that's fair enough. That's the mass market out there. There is a large market like that. And no matter how much education we try to put out there in terms of showing people how to make the picture that little bit better and so on, there's a huge area of that market, Jules, that are just not interested. And, you know, I'm like that with certain things. You know, you could take me into B&Q and I'll glaze over, you know, because DIY is not my thing, and I'm not interested in drills and drill bits and all that kind of thing. But so you're going to have that sector that they just want a TV, they just want to watch and so on. And that's fair enough. And, you know, we're not criticizing anybody that's like that out there, because we're exactly the same when it comes to other areas of life or technology or whatever. But for those who want a little bit of quality, they want to know they're buying something good, they want to know that things are going to last a few years. For you, what are the important criteria that they should be looking at when it comes to a product, Jules?
But I'm presuming that, those in the main are our forum users. They are looking for, again, a TV that's going to have the best black levels. There's an understanding that contrast is extremely important to the quality of the image they're going to get. Generally, they're going to gravitate towards OLED, as we've probably seen in the polls that we've been running as well, the inclination towards OLED among AV forums users. They're going to want, it's going to fall down into two categories there. As we said before, somebody wants the latest and the greatest, the brightest nits level, you know, available with probably a G4 or, you know, a Sony A95L or whatever else. And then you're going to have the people who, as you say, are going to be happy with maybe an 800 nits C3 or something like that. You know, it's difficult to say, Phil, because we have such a range of people.
You've just hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was pushing for. So there there is no such thing as a perfect TV. And you've just proven that point, you know, by trying to list the things that people should, you know. I think the important thing here, Martin, is you as a user, you as a buyer, figure out what you want. Are you a gamer? You know, do you need 4 HDMI 2.1? Because immediately that knocks a lot of TVs off your list if that's really, really important to you. So as a buyer, you're going to have your own tick list there, and you're going to look for what it is that you want.
Yeah, some manufacturers actually use those kind of schemes to help you identify which product you use. Admittedly, that tends to be PC manufacturers, but actually it might not be a bad idea for TV manufacturers to do that. You know, you start with a clean slate and then you move through a questionnaire with them. What do you need? What's important to you? And then suggest a few products at the end of that process.
Yeah, of course, it doesn't have to be manufacturers. You know, AV forums is great for that. We're banging on about AV forums today, but when it comes to buying a product, you know, it's a great resource, and of course, you can find a lot of that as well through the website. So, just wrapping up on this part of the podcast before we quickly go into the polls, is there anything that we're missing here, Jules, that you think is maybe important for people to consider when it comes to buying a TV? Should they think about warranty? Should they think about burn-in? Are these actually issues that they should worry about?
Burn-in certainly was. It's certainly less so much now. And I know that some retailers do give not just a 5-year warranty, but, you know, a burn-in warranty too. So that peace of mind, particularly, I guess, if you're a gamer, again, that's back of your mind as well. Maybe you've got some static images sitting up there for quite a while when you're gaming, and you want to make sure you just want that sort of guarantee that should anything get burnt in, you're going to be covered. I mean, those, depending on your usage, that's going to be important to you. Again, other things like operating systems as well. You're going to live with this for 5 years. If it's difficult to get to where you want to get, if you need the YouTube videos or to Prime or whatever, can you get there simply? I mean, certain methods of operation could irritate you after a while if you've got to keep, it's just a few extra buttons, but it's ease of use. We're looking for ease of living, and we want our TVs again to sort of, mesh in with our sort of modern lifestyles. You shouldn't have to sort of stand on one leg and stick your finger in the air to get to the content you want.
Yeah, and
So.
it's good to see manufacturers actually taking that on board. There's two or three this year who are guaranteeing that they will update your TV for the next 5 years and make sure that it's current for the next 5 years, as long as hardware dependent, in terms of updating their smart systems. I know LG are running a scheme where they will update your TV every year, that your webOS will get updated after the new models come out. So things like that, you're going to have your TV for 5 years. Then you've got that little bit of peace of mind if you go with certain brands, that they are guaranteeing to you that they are going to keep the TVs updated. Right, let's move on to the.
And I'm sorry to say, just to that point, Phil, you remember the days when we all rented our televisions. And I came across somebody recently who also rents his TV, and I thought, I didn't think this was still a thing. But it allows him, his rental agreement, to actually have the latest model every single year. So if you are somebody who, you could just return your G3 and get a G4. So if you're somebody, who's into having the latest and the greatest, maybe that model, rather than purchasing, renting, and swapping it every year, is something
I had
that
no
could
idea
be.
you could still do that.
I had no idea either, but this person did it. I can't remember what company it was, but it seemed like, that could be a reasonable model for somebody.
Also, some
So.
retailers do very preferential warranty. I mean, I think John Lewis, I don't know if they still do this, but if you had a catastrophic failure of a TV, they would yet let you apply the price of that TV within the 5 years to a brand new set and then extend the warranty again. So
No, there are some good deals out there, and warranties and so on. So yeah, that is an important thing to think about as well, where you buy your TV, and find a good dealer. There's nothing better than finding someone who will demonstrate the TV to you, will let you play whatever material you want on there, and don't be scared to, if you're into odd things that you like to watch on your TV, don't be scared. Go and test it. Don't test it on just demo equipment and demo clips, because that's not telling you anything about how you're going to use the TV. So think about what is it you watch and take some demo footage with you and that kind of thing. Find a dealer. But we need to move on swiftly now, because we're going to quickly go through the poll results that we posted to X and YouTube. We posted the same questions. We're going to give you some of the rough numbers here in terms of the answers. But the first question was, what is the most important factor in your next TV purchase? So we had 68 replies on X at the time of this podcast, 104 on YouTube at the time of this podcast. And they were both very, very similar in the 60% range, in terms of the latest tech and features is what they go for. And in the 30 to 40% range in terms of value for money. So definitely the tech, and latest tech and features win out over value for money there. So there you go. I thought value for money would be a lot stronger, but then that's maybe talking to our audience there, out there on YouTube and X as well. That's what's important to them. Question two, Jules, do you want to do this one?
How often do you replace your main TV? Again, sort of a remarkable similarity in responses between Twitter and YouTube, roughly around every year, was just 1% on Twitter. Interesting. And then every 2 to 3 years, between 14 and 20%, and then every 5 to 10 years, around 62 to 68%. So, and then the last segment is only when the TV packs in, when it stops working, and that's around 18%.
And that, it's it isn't it funny how close these results are? Two completely
It
different
is.
platforms, but very, very similar there. So number three, let's go over to Martin for this one.
So question three, if your TV breaks down, do you consider having it repaired? And the Twitter slash X responses were yes, 44%, and no, 56%. So almost half and half. And compare that to YouTube. Again, very similar, but weighted towards no. So yes was 47% and no was 53%.
Yeah, very, very, very close to call on those ones. So
yeah,
I guess having it repaired, it's nice to see people considering that, even if it is the lower figure there, because, you know, I think recycling is a thing. You know, let's not just throw these things away. Let's try and fix them. So
presumably yeah. these are TVs that are out of warranty. I mean, if it's in warranty, you're going to get it repaired.
I don't think we went as specific, but yeah, if it's under warranty then, and it's, they're going to pay for it, then absolutely get it repaired first of all. Right, so question four was the purpose of your new TV and main TV upgrade. So X responses, 81 responses at the time of this podcast, 152 on YouTube. When we asked the questions, replace the TV over five-year-olds, 46%, between 44 and 46%-ish between the two. Moving to a different display technology was around about the 18 to 22%. And then get a larger screen size, which was quite a large number. And we've seen that in the marketplace as well. So you're looking at around about 30 to 40% of people are looking to get a larger screen size. That's why they are replacing their screens there. So yeah, it's again, another interesting response there to the questions. And I guess a little bit, these are what we'd expect to get back. But again, it is interesting to actually see. And there are good numbers here. Question five, Jules, I don't know if you want to do that, but you had 92 on X and 133 on Twitter. So again, a good pool of people.
Yeah, how many TVs are there in your household? Just the one, around 20%, two, around 30 to 33%, and three, 25 to 29%, and four or more is around 20%. So two to three TVs is the most popular. We've only got one in our household, but we've got lots of laptops. I'm sitting on laptops. They're everywhere.
Okay, and question number six, Martin, what did we get response-wise there?
Question number six is, what is your next TV purchase likely to be? For the Twitter responses, we had 85 in the poll and YouTube 179. Next TV purchase likely to be OLED 70 to 77%.
And that
based
includes
on both those.
That includes QD OLED in there just to clarify
that. Including QD OLED. Mini LED, which includes LED, LCD, and QLED, is 9%, actually quite low on the Twitter X responses, but 20% on YouTube. And don't know yet, 21% for Twitter, and don't know yet, 3% on YouTube. So a little bit more disparity in that one.
Yeah, quite a bit. But then you're almost doubling the responses there as
Correct.
Well.
Correct,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, bigger sample. But and again, mini LED, that just encapsulated all the different names for that technology that was out there as well. So yeah, that's interesting seeing. But I guess, Jules, we shouldn't be shocked by the fact that mini LED, LCD, QLED, QNED, they're not getting as strong as sales now because of OLED. And I think people are seeing OLED picture quality now and moving towards that technology.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, there was a bit of excitement, wasn't there, if you can call it that, at the CES announcements of TCL and Hisense about their new mini LED TVs. And there was a lot of forum discussion about, is this the end for projectors? So it's quite interesting in the light of that to actually see that the responders to this poll are still predominantly sticking with OLED, and that mini LED is sort of not so much in their plans for next year. And that might again speak to what I pick up from the forums, which is that so many of our forum users appreciate the self-emitting nature of the OLED pixels and the ability to give that contrast on a pixel level rather than on a zonal level. So black level is so important.
But again, you know, getting back to the perfect TV side of things, you know, mini LED is going to suit a lot of use cases. A lot of people, you know, if they are a little bit concerned about burning and that kind of thing, because they're gamers and into that side of things, then a mini LED LCD TV might be better suited, because they're in bright environment, they never dim the lights and so on. And a lot of these TVs are getting a lot better. You know, the processing technology we have now, AI technology on board these things. It'll be interesting to come back in a year and ask the same question and see if we're still getting the same responses, because I can see a mini LED just with what manufacturers are prepping for this year. There's going to be a push back again with that technology to suit certain use cases. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what happens with that. So the final question, and again, these were just for fun. These were just because we were doing this subject in the podcast. And we thought we'd put it out to our community out there just to get some responses in terms of generalization questions. And this one's, which manufacturer is your next likely TV to be? Now, for me, I don't know about you guys, but I'm very much technology driven and performance driven, and the name on the front doesn't usually sway me in terms of brand bias and that kind of thing. I've never been somebody, apart from Ford Mustangs, which is not a TV, you know, that matters a lot to me. But in terms of technology, I'm very much along the lines of performance and picture quality and so on. So I've never held any brands in particular up highly. I'm happy to look at all and pick my winner. But I guess we shouldn't have really be surprised at the results here, because LG walks away with this with quite considerable margin, 106 replies on X and Twitter, 206, another 100 responses on YouTube, yet the numbers are very, very, very similar in terms of the manufacturers. And 1, 2, 3 is LG, Samsung, Sony, and then other, not at place number 4. So you're talking Philips, Panasonic, TCL, Hisense, and on the bottom runs there. And I guess that kind of points towards, when you look at the sales charts, that backs up in terms of what people are actually buying out there. And of course, LG are most known for OLED, and we've just seen that most people going out in question 6 was, you know, OLED was 70-odd%. So we shouldn't be surprised with the fact that LG are getting 39 to 45% of that market.
Yeah.
Bill, Sorry, Bill, I was just going to pick up on your point as well. You know, it's probably better not to be too loyal to a brand, because every brand can produce duff products every so often. And that's why you come to AV forums, is to make sure you don't fall into any of the traps. But every manufacturer is guilty of it, of producing good stuff and bad.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, Jules, I don't think we're surprised by the result here, are we? And especially when you go out and actually see what people are buying.
Yeah, and I think, again, if you're looking at LG, they're a good proportion of those people probably be buying it because of its gaming reputation as well. So, so that's sort of heavily weighted towards them. And of course, only remains for the likes of Sony, etc., to up their, excuse the pun, up their game in this respect, and to match the capabilities there.
Yeah, I think if Samsung got rid of this B in their bonnet with Dolby Vision, I think they would increase their sales. It's, you know, it seems a very, very strange thing, but that's a subject for another day, because we've run out of time once again on the TV display and calibration edition of this podcast. Thank you very much for your replies to the polls. We'll run those every week, so do get involved. And of course, if you've got any questions, queries, comments on what we've been discussing in this podcast, then get them in on the usual way. Either go to AV Forums and leave your comment there, or if you're watching YouTube, comments down below, and we'll answer them in the next podcast. Our next episode is the Home AV Edition. It's Monday, the 18th of March. And of course, all our Monday podcasts go out at 7 p.m. on YouTube, and a little bit later, audio only from your usual suppliers. And that's it for this week. If you feel like we deserve a coffee, then you can buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Thank you to the guys today, and we'll see you in the next one.